George Zolicki is considered one of the top sales trainers in America today. His adroit style at communicating and capturing his listening and reading audiences, compelling them to look closely at what really stops them from getting where they want to be in life and what they want out of life. A former college dean, teacher, and counselor places major emphasis on understanding the root causes of emotions, their meanings, and corresponding behavioral patterns.
All right, thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. What a great group. Okay, this part of the program is really a real change of pace, because what I'm going to do here is talk to you about what really makes a difference. The title of the talk is the Profile of a Champion. And after about 20-some years researching and working with people, and predominantly in the field of motivational psychology, I came to some things a few years back. So it's not going to be so much who we find that's going to make the difference. The difference is going to be what can you and I become as in the process of finding others to join us. Is that distinction clear? In other words, where it begins always in achievement is with you and I. And so this talk is about taking a look at how you and I align ourselves and our behaviors and our attitudes and thoughts consistent with what I call the profile of a champion. Now, if only 5% of people, by any statistic that you look at, reach retirement age in any kind of shape at all financially, let alone emotionally and otherwise, then what's missing? And what's missing is we have not really learned what it means to take responsibility for producing a result and what ingredients really go into a personality that achieves. Now, the next thing I want to assure you is that every single quality that I'm going to talk about is acquired. There are no natural born champions. For it is true that every person is a champion in their own right. They have the potential to be a champion in something. And those who become the champions in something have these cluster traits very much in place in their personality structure. And since they're all acquired, we're going to see where we might be shy and where we might be strong. And then it's your decision, it's your choice to discover whether or not it's worth working on. Now, it's so important that everyone you're going to deal with is in the same situation that you and I are. As you go out to recruit somebody, as you go out to interact with somebody, this stuff is going to be there or not be there. And the sharper you are at spotting it or seeing it potentially being able to be cultivated, the more successful you're going to be. Because what will wash you out of this business is listening to people tell you what they're going to do and watching them do quite to the contrary. And so if this will help you to see the caliber of person, the kind of person that you want to involve yourself with, and if it also helps you see that, yes, I'm real shy over in this area. I could do a lot of improving in this area, and all I do is ask people to tell the truth. And you'd be amazed how difficult that is. Even though nobody's listening, we get convinced that even if I acknowledge it to myself, somebody heard it. So the hardest thing in the world is to be able to be truthful about it. So let's look at the profile of a champion. The first quality, the first attitude that shows up before anything is ever achieved is desire. Now, I want to talk to you about desire. Because if all it took was desire, then there'd be a whole lot of people successful. Because most people live under the illusion that they have a desire to achieve something or get something. Isn't that true? So we need to dissect desire to see just how it's held by the champion as opposed to those who are runner-up. The champion, the desire for the champion is an imperative of purpose. In other words, I absolutely have a purpose that I'm on fire with. And I desire to achieve that purpose. Now, if you are only inspired to meet your needs, you will not ever get the kind of desire that will compel you to do great things. And very simply, needs are logical. And logical things don't compel us to reach beyond our comfortable grasp. So the next thing they discovered is after they had a purpose and they had a desire, and the kind of desire is not what I call anything less than white hot. I mean, it's like taking a stand. It's like getting to that Red Sea place in your life where you make a declaration that this is it. The power that goes with that is unbelievable. Anything less than that is what I call tentative. And I shall tell you clearly that any time you're tentative, you have no power. I see that everybody understands that one. So if I'm going to have my desire work for me, and if it's going to be white hot, and I have an imperative purpose, something I'm going after, then the key to keeping your desire in place is to surrender to your purpose. Now watch what happens psychologically when I surrender to purpose. I am no longer engaged in the same way with the obstacles that I usually confront in any great achievement. Any great journey has lots of obstacles. But I've just conditioned myself, I've just taken my mind and used it for me as opposed to against me. So I now have alignment. When I surrender, I now am willing to include everything that comes my way. To hear it another way, the reason that success eludes so many people is that the road to her altar of riches is laden with obstacles. And most people have no invincible means of support. If it isn't clearly evident to them in what's happening now, they have no vision. Solomon said over 3,000 years ago, if the people lack vision, they perish. So the way you have vision is to surrender to a purpose, because the purpose is larger than you and I individually. That's desire. The next thing we see in the profile is self-image. Now, I've given 3- and 4-hour lectures on self-image. We're not going to do that today. But if you want to see an area where people absolutely destroy themselves, it's in the area of self-image. So let's talk about it. First of all, your self-image is basically formed through your childhood years. In other words, you get to believe some things about you. And a little more than that, you get to believe them as being true. And there's the problem. You see, I want to make a statement to you, and I really and truly mean this. Nobody ever had the right to tell you you couldn't do it. But many people in our experience told us that, didn't they? And if they only knew what they did, because all of my behaviors, everything that I hold for in life is going to be consistent with my self-image, i.e., my thoughts of myself. I have created a prison or a paradise to play in when I created my self-image. Now, do you notice I said I created my self-image? I'm taking responsibility for it. So in order for that to show up for you or your people, if that is a block right now, something needs to take place, and I'll tell you what it is in an instant. Just forgive all of those people who suggested you were limited in any way. They had no authority or any right to do it to you. You know, in education, we knew if we took a sampling of students and we told this group of students that we expected incredible achievement out of them, that you are capable, you are marvelous, that group of students would perform that way. The same basic IQ over here, we say to them, we're concerned about your learning abilities. There are some indications that you're not going to cut it. And this group would deliver exactly what we suggested to them. Now take that on a larger scale, and you have you. All of your self-chatter and all of your beliefs about yourself are always the net result of your experiences with significant others in your life, with the addition of you believe them. So if you can forgive them all, you might get the slate clean. So let's talk about how we might improve a self-image. You'll hear people talk about self-image, and they never get to dissect it so that you can see how do you actually improve a self-image. Well, first of all, if it's based upon the belief systems, and the belief systems are based upon the patterns of my mind, my definitions and interpretations of the events. Let me say that again. I develop those by ascribing themes to the stimuli that come into me. I make things mean something, don't I? So all the things that happen to me, I have self-talk about those, and I make them mean something. So I acquired some beliefs, and you acquired some beliefs about yourself out of the patterns of your thinking. And they became habitual. So then what we get into is what I call resisting who I am. when I understand I need to do something about my self-image, the first thing most people do is say, well, I'm going to change. How many people have made promises they're going to change only to discover they were worse off a month later than they were when they began? Can I see your hands? Certainly. Anybody who's in touch with themselves in a real sense would understand that that's true for all of us. And the reason is that which you resist about you persists about you. You're paying so much attention to it, gives it, in a sense, beingness, makes it be. So what you need to do is not focus on what's wrong with you. What you need to do is focus on what you want to be. Get a vision of where you're headed and stay focused on where you're headed. And you'll be amazed. You'll start to get engaged in what I call new activities. Now we're giving you the real substance of how to change your self-image. You must be willing to get out of your comfort zone. Which, incidentally, if you really knew what a comfort zone was, you'd be only too eager to jump out. It's so inconsistent with your capabilities as a human being. It's a tremendous illusion that people live with, and they're slowly killing themselves because they don't understand that their true nature is to achieve, to stretch, to excel, to reach. So now I'm going to take a look and say, okay, let's say you have a bad habit. It's part of your self-image, and that gets you down. I have a habit of procrastinating or not keeping my word or lying, whatever it might be for you. And you keep resisting that habit, what you do is you get further engaged. Dr. Dunlap, a researcher in behavioral psychology, demonstrated clearly that the harder one tried to break a habit, the more ingrained it became. And most of us have been taught to resist and fight and change and all of this, right? But if you were taught to look beyond it, what is it you want to replace it with? And focus your mental energies there, this thing sort of dissipates in the process. Now you're willing to explore and engage in new activities, and here's what happens when you engage in new activities. When you engage in new activities, you have now extended your domain of possibilities in direct proportion to your willingness to keep venturing out. Is that not true? You have now positioned yourself for a tremendous phenomena. And that is that you can now become successful in some new things that you're trying, yes or no? That's how you're going to restructure your self-image. Because since the self-image is based upon what you believe, it's a set of beliefs about yourself, you cannot lie over the top of a fundamental belief, can you? So if I believe myself incapable based upon experience, then who I am is incapable until I can have some new experiences that I succeed at, and I have some new input, some new data, and I can have some new beliefs. There's the phenomena of changing the self-image. So it's not about resistance. It's about starting, and just get this real clear. It's about starting that you're okay where you're at. Did you hear me? See, most people start saying, this is bad about me, this is no good about me, this, and you want to illustrate it? When's the last time, truthfully, that anybody in this room looked in the mirror in the morning and looked and said, how marvelous I look. As opposed to, my nose is crooked, my eyes aren't the same size, I don't like this move over here, I got a mole on my cheek. Isn't it true that what we do about self-image daily, day in and day out, is just scrutinize ourselves and tell ourselves how we don't live up to some imaginary standard? And do you realize if we all looked alike, we wouldn't even know how to make a distinction between each other? Okay. So we can improve that self-image. And the main thing is, please, go back in your mind and just remember who those people were that told you. I want you to know they told you because they loved you and we just didn't get their love. And let it be okay. Okay? Most of them were parents and well-intentioned teachers, ministers, rabbis, and so forth. They really did love us. They didn't know any better. Can you forgive them for it? Because if you don't forgive them, you're engaged with something that is incomplete and you'll never get to where I'm talking about. Okay? So that's one of the first things. Okay, next. Oh, this is a fun one. Let's talk about goals, mind, and emotions. When I talk about goals, mind, and emotions, I connect them. Because, let me tell you straight, when I used to hear about goals when I was growing up, I never liked them. I mean, I really resisted goals. Let me see the hands. Come on. Truth? Yeah, you all did. Now I'm going to tell you why. And if it's not true, just say, that wasn't true for me. But the reason we resisted goals in our experience of growing up is because it always appeared to us that it was someone else's idea for how I should be, perform, expectations of someone else for me. It seemed like I never got the vote on it.
And so when I get that feeling, I have a sense about me that I resist. I want to kind of know I'm somewhat dictating some of the rules in the game, don't you? But supposing you were to know, incidentally, that's why you don't write down your goals. You know why you don't write down your goals? Because you know you're not going to keep your word. Do you ever notice how heavy a pen is when an instructor says, okay, folks, we're going to have a 10-minute goal-writing session. You go south. You sneeze, you need to go to the toilet, anything, but don't write them down. And when you start writing, you notice how limited they get. Oh, I can't do that one. So it's your self-talk again, you see? It's your self-talk. So what if I were to suggest to you that these are connected, but you could hold them contextually in a new way? In other words, nothing's going to change except the way you hold it, and then everything changes. Okay, so we're not about changing the conditions. What we're about is changing how you interact with the conditions. Okay, let's look at ourselves. As a human being, I'm obviously, like Dr. Maxwell Maltz said, I'm obviously like a bicycle. If a bicycle isn't headed towards something, moving towards something, it loses its equilibrium and it'll fall over, correct? Well, you and I are designed exactly like that emotionally. If we are not going towards something, our life force, our energies are just kind of splintered and splattered. And they cannot produce results like that. So if I know that I'm made with an intellect, and that gift of intellect is also a responsible gift, because I have that intellect, I can actually shape or co-create things in my experience. You see, when I was teaching in college in Michigan, I never had to get all the squirrels that were born in October to take a course at the University of Michigan in nut collecting 101 in order to survive. They instinctually knew what to do. So animals have instincts, so they're kind of programmed to know what to do next. You and I, because we have the gift of creative imagination, have a whole set of responsibilities to tune into how we're truly made as human beings. All you need to do is observe people who are up to something, who are out to achieve something, and you'll notice there's a different spark, there's a different demeanor about them. There's something attractive about people who are intending to do something. Have you noticed that? What you're truly seeing is a human being's true self-expression. To be consistent with who you are, the machinery of how you're made, is compelling. And we need to be compelled to reach out and achieve. So why set goals? Because it's consistent with your nature. Because it garners your energies and it focuses your energies to get things done. And what begins to happen once you're focused is in your sleep, you will begin to create blueprints for achieving what it is you want next. You've all experienced this. How many of you in your educational days had an examination you needed to take the next day, and maybe you had a math or chemistry or physics problem the night before? And when you went to bed, it was unresolved. No kidding, you didn't have the answer. And when you woke up in the morning like this, you knew where to go with it, or you had it complete. Can I see your hands that had that experience? So do you get that once I know what I want, my mind must underline, must align with what I want and help me to get it. Isn't that fantastic? Now, there's a downside to that. The downside to that is my mind just sits idly, kind of flittering about on anything that comes into my experience if it doesn't know what I want. So it says, George doesn't want anything, so let's give him a whole bunch of things that he may not want. Because it's clear he doesn't want anything. And that's called, and then the next thing that shows up is uncertainty, anxiety, confusion. Why do those emotions show up? They're warning signs. You're out of sync. I wish that I could get all the little kids in the world and give them this talk before they walk into those classrooms and confront education, so that they would take responsibility to excel and find it fun and find it consistent. We could change the whole nation with that. The mind. The mind. Let's dissect the mind in a very simple way. The mind has two parts to it. It has a thinker and a prover. And here's how it works. The thinker thinks, and the prover proves. What does the prover prove? The prover proves what the thinker thinks. So I think that I can't do it. That's my thought. I have a proving part of my mind that must bring into my experience the actual events and criteria that says and declares loudly, you're right. You couldn't do it. The thinker thinks, the prover proves. I can do it. The thinker thinks. What must the prover prove? The prover can't change its mind unless you do. When the thinker changes his mind through self-doubt, confusion, all the emotions you're not willing to include. At that moment, the thinker, in effect, says to the prover, I changed my mind. So what does the prover do? The prover then says, well, I must bring into your experience events and agreement with the fact that you can't do it. So you start hanging around with those who said they can't. You notice it? Up till that point, who are you hanging with? We can, we can, we can. The minute the mind makes that shift, you don't hang with the I cans anymore. You come over here with the I can'ts. And we start talking about we can't, we can't, we can't. And the more we talk about we can't, the more we agree. And the more the prover says, you're right, you're right, you're right. And pretty soon you're done. That's your mind. Your mind has incredible commitments to making you right exactly the way you are right now. You want to know why? Because it is in total agreement that that's exactly where you want to be. Now, that's a sad thing for a lot of people to come to terms with. That no kidding, you and I are right now exactly where we planned to be. It is our thinking, our thoughts, and our activation of those thoughts as we interact with others to place us exactly where we are now. That's responsibility. The emotions. I'm going to do a section at the end of this around emotions, but let me tell you about emotions. I've spent a lot of time working with emotions. I go back so far as to say, I tell a little fairy tale about emotions. I believe that emotions were invented by human beings in order to manipulate, dominate, and control everything in their experience. Now, even if that's not true, totally, just hold it that way for a while and see what shows up. Babies cry, so mommy responds. If I have a particular behavior that solicits a response that I like, I continue the behavior, do I not? Okay? And so we're fashioning from the very beginning, we're fashioning a character. And we're fashioning the character out of emotional responses. So when you get, I'm going to say this, usually I say this about 5 hours into my seminar, that your whole life was designed around avoiding uncomfortable emotions that you've chosen to be the most uncomfortable for you. I'll just sit with that one for a minute. You have emotions that you have voted on as being so severe for you to experience, you have shaped your entire life out of the avoidance of those emotions. Like failure, undeserving, unlovable, not good enough. And when you realize the cost of not being able to have new themes attached to those same emotions, you'll begin to open up and say, who voted on that? Who made me feel the way I feel about that other than me? Who made the theme after the stimulation, the emotional response? Who attached the intellectual jargon that said this is what it means other than you? Is everybody with me? And you will discover that if you are unwilling to include emotions and develop mastery of response, you're going to lose. I'll go so far as to say there is no other reason on the planet that you will fail in this business other than your emotions. Now, when you get that they're only feelings, and when you get that you made up what they mean, when you get that you have made yourself the victim of your own thinking around your emotions, you may discover it's really worth listening to what I'm saying. I can tell by the looks on your face, some of you have been had already just this far, right? But it's tragic, and the thing that's tragic about it, people, is that nobody addresses this. They just tell you, go out there, let the rubber hit the road, you're all set, you're pumped up, we motivated you, and then Monday you got a flat tire. Isn't that true? And the reason is that you encounter that pattern of emotions that sends you down the tubes all the time again, and you react off of pattern. You see, you got a whole series of tapes of what that means. You don't stand a chance. You're not even at choice in the matter. It's stimulus, response, I'm out. Until you wake up. And if you think that your people are not going to encounter every single thing I'm speaking about, they are.
And you, as leaders, should know this, so when they do encounter it, you know how to hold them in a different way. Facilitate them getting through it. Coach them to be willing to include it. Because mastery lives there and no place else. When you get into this, and if you are willing to include day after day, moment by moment, the emotional reactions that come into your experience as being okay, no matter what they are, they're just okay. They're just emotions. They're just feelings. They're just interpretations I have about them. They will not anymore have the same grip on you, I can promise you that. You're gripped by your tapes. Take responsibility for being the cause of everything that you are and have. And responsibility is not like blame. Blame doesn't work. Responsibility is seeing how you made it possible for whatever it is in your life to be there. That's responsibility. There's a difference. So let's talk about commitment. Is everybody clear on the thinker thinks and the prover proves? I mean, we could go on and go into all sophisticated stuff. It doesn't make any difference. That's it. When you get all through translating, that's what's going on inside of your head. You must have alignment with what you speak in your mind with what eventually shows up. Let me say it one more way for you so you really get it. Imagine that thoughts are things, and I happen to hold that thoughts are things. They're just in a different form. Because everything that's been thought that shows up as matter was preceded by a thought. Therefore, thoughts are things. The next thing that we're going to talk about is a word called commitment. And this is a word that just by merely speaking it, if you were to be able to ascertain your true emotional responses inside, it's anxiety-inducing, isn't it? How many of you noticed, are that much in touch with your feelings that when you hear the word commitment, that you feel something move inside of you? Like it's just, I mean, yeah, just a little something. See, already what you're going into is the chatter of your mind that says commitment is tough. You know? So now notice what's happening. The next series of thoughts is the thinker thinks that commitment is tough, so what must the prover prove? So you're gone. If you think commitment is tough, then you're going to get commitment as tough. You see, the secret of achievers is not that they don't feel all the feelings. They feel them to the fullest range, except they interpret them differently. Okay, so what is commitment? Oh, this is one of my favorites, because I see so little of it. I'm going to give you my definition and see how it fits. Commitment is doing the thing that you said you were going to do long after the mood you said it in has left you. Mm-hmm. Here's what commitment is for most people. Here's what commitment is for 98% of the people, unfortunately. Here's what it is. I'll do what it takes, whatever it takes, for as long as it takes, until... And then the list, until my wife says no, until my son doesn't agree with me, until I don't sponsor the first five people I talk to, until I find out I wasn't cut out for this one. You know, that's a good one, right? I'm just not cut out for this. I call that my cookie cutter syndrome. You know, here you are, cut out brain surgeon. You know, there's my kid. You know? Nothing else involved, you know? They hit a wall of resistance and it's the end of the game. Okay? So commitment, the dynamic aspect of commitment is taking responsibility to keep your word. You hear it? I teach a seminar that lasts 12 hours long. And in that seminar, a person gets to totally experience themselves as they are, not as they think they are. All the pretenses and cons are stripped away. And a person gets to look clearly at who they are. And what they discover by the end of that day is that most of what they speak is not true. Isn't that sad? It's not sad. You should see how glad they are to discover it. They can give up their games. They no longer have to be concerned. They can just experience the world as it is. They have no vested interest in being right. They don't care. They have no vested interest in having to appear a particular way to impress anyone. It's not important. They just begin to discover the magnificent self that lives under that facade by doing one thing, speaking the truth, and doing what you speak. There's nothing more powerful on this planet than someone who speaks and does what they speak. We all want to be in business with those people, don't we? You ever notice? We may be the most untrustworthy soul in the world, but we want to do business with who? Another untrustworthy soul? No.
We want to do business with someone that we say, you can rely on John. How do I know that? Because John has a history of reliability. What does that mean? John keeps his word. Oh, I'll be at your meeting Tuesday night. Gee, John, I didn't see you at the meeting. Oh, you wouldn't believe what happened to me. Lie. 98 times out of 100, it's not true. You just weren't a priority. The meeting wasn't a priority. They spoke a lie in the first place, and now they got to reconcile it. You know how much energy is wasted in covering all that stuff up? So you want to have truthful people in your experience? Guess where it starts? I'm telling you something. You want some real power? If you're not up to anything yourself, and you are being open and truthful, people who don't want to live like that will run from you, but people who want to will be very attracted to you. See, you create your reality. You create who's in your experience as friend or not friend. How do you hold these principles? It's all that matters. And in the most common hours, you are going to discover alignment with other people who hold that thing as sacred also, and then there are two of you. And then two of you march until when? You find another. And the best way to reach the whole world in time is to reach one person at a time. You don't need to be in a race. What you need to do is be consistent and keep your word around your commitment. Now, I don't even know what your commitment is, but whatever it is, would you do it? And would you not have anything in the world that can take away your word? I'm going to tell you why. The only power you and I have in life is our word. I'm going to say that again. The only power you and I have in life is our word. And how cheaply we use it. I'm going to call 5 people this week because I made an agreement with you. I call 2 and they say, I'm not interested. I forget my commitment and my word. You realize I just sold out on my power? You would be better off to call all 5 and cry. I'm not kidding you. From an emotional point of view, you have no idea how you're ripping yourself off when you speak one thing and do another. You know how much psychic energy it takes to cover up those lies? And I'm telling you, they're outright lies. Because if you don't hold them like that, we're going to continue to do them, aren't we? Oh, that was so bad about that. I told you I was going to be there, and I gave you a little story. Until story becomes the pattern, huh? And then we don't have any result. So commitment is going out on the limb. Incidentally, isn't that where nature put all the fruit? Have you noticed? I mean, we're always getting messages, huh? You know, where's the fruit? Out on the limb. I got to go out there. But I want to get it. So commitment is really keeping your word, doing what it is you said you were going to do long after the mood you set it in has left you. You notice how we just handled how you feel about it? Let me say that again. Do you notice that we just handled, I don't care how you feel about it? Do it anyway because you said it. Now, what's the power in that? Let me give you a reason for that. Emerson said something that was profound, and too many people have failed to listen to it. He said, do the thing, and you shall have power. Now, just stop for a moment and think about what he was saying. What came to my mind is like the great composers, Mozart, Beethoven, Bach. Do you think that those people waited for inspiration before they produced? They understood that if they engaged in the activity, the genius, the creative intellect would sooner or later blossom in that territory called doing, not in the territory called waiting to do. You need to quit dipping your toes around your intentions. You need to jump in and embrace them and stay committed to your word, and you can achieve anything you want to. Commitment. Persistence. Persistence is nothing more than the dynamic aspect of your commitment. It's the doing phase over and over again. Now, let me give you a new way to hold persistence. For years, I held persistence as struggle and effort. How about you? Isn't it? Oh, persistence! And yet, I noticed that great achievers didn't seem to have that stuff going on. They weren't resisting what was in their experience. They didn't hold persistence as something to kind of grind through. They held persistence as an absolute evidence of their commitment. It was just like in the bundle. It's tied back to the surrender to purpose. You see how you can handle all of these things when your purpose is larger than your considerations of how you feel? Persistence is not struggle and effort. It's tied to your initial surrender to keep your word to do what it is you spoke. Now, if I'm holding persistence in that way, I can now hear Shakespeare in a different way. Much rain wears the marble. Rain is kind of nice, it's just consistent, and if it rains enough, it wears the marble. I can hear Ogmandino when he says, I shall persist until I succeed. That's beautiful self-talk. He never left him a way out. Isn't that great? I simply shall persist until I succeed. There's no way out. Muhammad said, God is with those who persevere. We could go on and on. But the way you hold perseverance, if you hold it as struggle and effort, what must the mind produce for you in your experience? It must produce the evidence of struggle and effort. Oh, I wish you could get this. It must produce for you the evidence of struggle and effort. The thinker thinks, the prover proves. The thinker thinks, it's hard. The prover must prove that it's hard. What you don't realize is that you activate your environment, your interactions with other people, based upon your emotional ground of being. And if my ground of being is struggle and effort, and I'm enrolling you in this program, guess what you're going to get? I don't want to do this thing. Looks too hard for you. Struggle and effort. Let me just check this out for a moment. How many of you have been holding persistence as struggle and effort? Darn right. Can you see a difference? Can you see the value of surrender now to knowing what it is? This is about your life. I don't care what you're trying to achieve. Okay. Enthusiasm. Enthusiasm is a funny, it's a funny word in a way. You know, I say that enthusiasm is the least expensive and most beneficial cosmetic in the world. I mean, it will transform people from ordinary into alive, attractive people. I'm not kidding. I've seen absolutely beautiful appearing people that lacked enthusiasm and not want to be around them, haven't you? And yet I've seen very average looking people, or even people that somebody might say is homely, that is enthusiastic and you just can't wait to be around them. I mean, it transcends all the stuff we have. Now, the way you need to be enthusiastic is your way. Isn't that nice? There's no way for you to be enthusiastic but your way. It's a way you hold life's possibilities that shows up in your demeanor as a human being. I want you to know clearly there are only two types of people in the world. Whether they're in churches, whether they're in manufacturing plants, whether they're on football teams, or whether they're working in USA. And those two types are, there are those who are inspired and there are those who are not. Yes or no? You show me someone who's inspired and I'll show you someone who's going to achieve something. And you show me someone who's not and I'll show you someone who needs motivation. How's it going to work? You see why motivation does not work when you lay it over the top of unresolved self-images, patterns of thinking that are self-defeating? How can motivation work? It's like putting a Band-Aid on a major wound. It's not going to work. Enthusiasm, here's another reason for it. I'm not kidding you. Guess who you discover when you're enthusiastic? The best friend you'll ever have, yourself. Now, if you don't think so, just think back in your life at times when you were enthusiastic, even some of you very staid people that never let it show up. There are moments, I can assure you, that showed up for you. And I want you to think for a moment how you were. How were you in those moments? Didn't all of you show up? Like, wow, I'm here, this is great. And then you walk out the door and you meet the world and it's like, I'm Mr. Cool again, whatever that whatever that pretense is that you have around yourself. That begins to show up. But at least momentarily, most of us have had those moments where we were truly alive with enthusiasm and what was going on. Guess what? You discovered you in those moments. And I'll tell you what, you liked you too. You know, when you don't like you, it's when you fail to have true self-expression of who you are. That's when you don't like you. It's attractive, it's imaginative, it's ardent, it's powerful. That's enthusiasm. Now, how do you become enthusiastic? I'm going to give you an ironclad way. You become enthusiastic by acting enthusiastically. Let's go back to Emerson. Emerson said, do the thing and you shall have power. Now, I may not feel enthusiastic, but I have learned, my dear friends, that I cannot wait for my interpretation of my feelings before I do something, because I'll never get anywhere. That's what I'm trying to teach you today. So I know for sure the experience and emotion of enthusiasm is not present. But I know something else for sure. If I begin to act the part, and I begin to get involved, sooner or later, what happens? Because I'm holding enthusiasm as a possibility, it must show up in my experience. Yes or no? Okay? Well, when are we going to do this? The time, my dear friend, let me tell you about time. Everybody says, I don't have time. How many of you have heard people say, I don't have any time? Okay, you know what's the amazing thing about all? Is this is one area that I'm absolutely certain we've been treated equally. Every single one of us has the same amount of time every day. Is that not true? Okay? So now let me handle time for you. I believe that time is nature's invention, you know, kind of placed it in the universe so that all things that were happening in the universe didn't happen simultaneously. Okay, so there's time. But how do you want to hold time? I'll tell you how you want to hold time if you want to truly be alive. You want to hold time that this is it. This is it. See, all you and I ever have, and I want you to get this clearly, it'll help you a lot, in your worry syndromes, in your anticipation of tomorrow, in your reliving yesterday's hurts, you know that stuff we just wallow in? Okay? The only place in the universe that time means anything is in the mind of man. Nothing else keeps track of it. Kind of interesting, isn't it? You know, Montaigne, the great French philosopher, said, most of my life has been filled with terrible misfortune, most of which never happened. So supposing you could get that time is really a now experience. You see, you know the reason why most people aren't happy? Would you like to know that? It's because they don't get that this is it. They think happiness is over there. It's got to be around that corner or around that building. They don't get that happiness is a present condition of thinking happy thoughts. That's all happiness is. And when you think happy thoughts, what must show up in your experience? Happiness. I create happiness with the patterns of my mind. And unhappiness is not the result of who I'm with or how I'm with them or the conditions of my life. Two men sat behind prison bars. One saw mud, the other saw stars. The condition is identical. How one holds it contextually is what makes the difference. If you want to see instant power in your life, begin to put into practice some of the things we're talking about here today. I've seen people's lives absolutely transformed when they catch on to this. You are beating yourselves to death for nothing. For nothing. So let's look at that now. Time. See all these lights up here? Just imagine that this is time. They just continuously blink, 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 all the time. They're always blinking in the moment of now. All that you are is an experience of those continuous blinks called time. What I'm saying to you people is the moment of opportunity is in the moment you're in. And it's never going to be, if you're not in the moment you're in, it's never going to be in your experience. Pascal said, most people running around through life, searching to be happy, inevitably will never be so. Isn't that interesting? Because happiness is a now experience. Now I'm happy, now I'm happy, now I'm happy, now I'm happy, now I'm happy. Not I'm going to meet the right person tomorrow, then I'll be happy, then I'll be happy, then I'll be happy. That doesn't work. In the moment of now, you meet that person, and it'll be another now happiness. Okay? So don't do this. Here's how I say most people live in relationship to time. It's like standing straddled. And on one leg, you've got it planted firmly into yesterday, reliving all the horrible things that happened to you. Huh? Isn't that a great one? I mean, we just love to wallow in that stuff. You know what it is, really? That's our excuse for not achieving. I want you to know that's your absolute commitment to making your life a continuous mess. That's what's lingering what yesterday is all about. Can you change anything back there? Well, you're amazed. You ought to see the themes you have around that. What if I had done this? It wouldn't have been that way. You forgot that you created it in the first place. Okay? So the other thing that we do is we stand on our tiptoes looking out to see what tomorrow holds. Isn't that true? Well, if you wake up tomorrow morning, guess what you got? Another now. Another moment of possibility. And that's all. People who get on with life and achieve things take each moment as it's the last, knowing that it's the beginning, always. And they take full responsibility for the gift of time. And they're not neurotic about what they achieve. They simply know that it's a wise use of time to be going towards something. I want you to know something else about time. I firmly believe that a very valuable use of time is relaxation and fun. I really believe people should have more fun. They should take themselves less seriously. They should openly communicate with each other. For someone who knows, believe me, you have no secrets. I can remember doing workshops and people would sit there like this, and about 3 hours into it, I'd walk down and say, here's your issue, here's what you do, here's how you do it, and here's what's happened to the people in your life because of it. And then they fall off the chair. See, they think they have these big secrets. You'd be amazed how you carry yourself, how you carry your face, your eyes, all of this stuff. See, we're very scientific today about this. There are indications with people. And we don't study them. See, we read one book and we say, no, I'm an expert, you know. We think that we're not a science. And we fixed everything around us, except we wait for us to break down emotionally too, don't we, before we get any help. And TV does a great job. You know, there's a country and western song out says, this ain't Dallas and this ain't Dynasty, you know. Guy's trying to tell his wife, hey, this is the best I can do. Okay? So, I promised you in the beginning that I was going to tell you what it is exactly that will stop you from getting whatever it is you want out of life. Didn't I promise you that? There's three categories. There's called preparation, there's called presentation, and then persistence. Three P's. Can you remember those? The first one is preparation, the second one is presentation, and the third one is persistence. Now, you will fail to prepare, and here's why. Now, here we go. We're getting you out of the business. Now we're creating a failure, okay? We're going to create a failure now because this is how it's going to happen. You will not prepare because you will not include and confront and embrace these emotions. You don't want to feel apathetic. You can't stand the feeling of fatigue. You can't stand feeling discouraged. You can't stand feeling inadequate. You can't stand feeling stupid. You surely can't stand feeling alone, and you can't stand feeling overwhelmed. How many of you this morning identified the emotion of overwhelm when we were trying to explain the new marketing plan? Let's see how many of you get in touch with your emotions. Okay, the rest of you aren't telling the truth. Yeah. There's Tom up there who's given the course, and he's got his hand up first. Okay, and incidentally, do you know that most people are not remotely in touch with their emotions? They don't even know what they're feeling. I did surveys, I'm not kidding, where I'd stand and say, how do you feel today? Oh, fine, good. No, I mean, not really, how do you feel? What do you mean? What's the matter with you? I want to know how you feel. Now, what are you feeling right now? By the time they get through, they say, well, yeah, I do have an ache over here. Yeah, I got a slight headache back here. And they don't even know how they're feeling. They're walking around unconscious. I mean, good. So I want you to know we have a great deal invested in not feeling. And I want you to know something else. Expressed emotions, expressed responsibly, do not kill. Suppressed emotions do kill. You wait until you see the continuous research around cancer as it relates to stress. I'm not a doctor, but I can tell you what I know about this stuff, that there will be one day proven, in my judgment and opinion, an absolute correlation. The messages we are sending mentally are predisposing ourselves to react and be susceptible. Presentation. Why won't you present? Now, let's say you got by prepared. I think I'm okay. I got the preparation done. I can talk to somebody. I mean, I need a PhD to say, would you plug in your television set and watch this? I'm not kidding. Don't complicate it. Okay? But now I've got to present to somebody. Maybe I have to go over and sit down with them in their living room, or maybe go out for a cup of coffee, or however it is you set yourself up. Here's why you won't present. You won't include these emotions. Doubt and confusion. Shy and nervous. You know what shy is, don't you? Who can guess what shy is? Shy is a racket. Shy is, please don't let you discover me. Humiliated. You don't want to be humiliated. I mean, you might give a bad presentation, correct? What's the emotion you have to include? Oh, is I humiliated? I didn't know half of the answers. Okay? Incompetent. Won't you have to include being incompetent in order to do it? Sure you will. Powerless. Like, I have no power to make you sign up with me. I did my best and you're not on the line. I have to include I'm powerless over you. Okay? Frustration. This is my 10th presentation and nobody signed. Do I need to include it? Resentment. I'm resenting coming to a meeting and hearing that Bill just sponsored 5 people and I had 5 no's. Click, click, click. Mine, play me a tape. You're not cut out for this, George. Out. I'm going to put my snuggies on, put my emotional covers over my head and go to sleep. but there'll be another opportunity tomorrow, and I'll never have to confront any of this same stuff, will I? Baloney. And you won't be persistent because you won't include these emotions. Discouraged, anger and offended, tired, undeserving, alone, frustration, jealous, and failure. If you are unwilling, and I'm going to wind down because we've got to get out of here now. If you are unwilling to include, not only include, but include as okay, and not only include as okay, but embrace the experience of these emotions that you have voted on as negative, you shall not be successful in anything. You may have a moment where you feel success, but it will not be long term. And especially in a business like this, where it's almost guaranteed if you can do this, you will be successful. Because the ones who are going to be successful, I will guarantee you, will have this stuff here mastered, and it's there for you. I thank you for your time. You've been a great group.